Poetry on the Radio. Poetry in and around the ACT. Today, the first of two installments in conversation with Canberra-based poet Carmel Summers. Plus the Rhyming Bugle, poetry news from the region. For Artsound FM, I'm Peter Searles. Carmel Summers' poetry has been published in Australia and overseas, including in the Canberra Times. She has been shortlisted in several poetry prizes, including the Australian Catholic University Prize in 2023. She has an MA in creative writing from Macquarie University and is writing a poetic biography of Elizabeth Cook as part of her PhD at the University of Canberra. Her collection, Lost in the Pleiades, inspired by the Pleiades, or Seven Sisters constellation, will be launched on Monday, February 19 at 7 p.m. at Smith's Alternative in Civic. Carmel Summers' work ranges through genres and forms, taking in Japanese forms and formal and unstructured poetry and ways of revealing history through poetry. Kimberly K. Williams began by asking her about her embrace of many forms of verse.
Well, you can see and hear how much you play with form.
I love playing with different forms of poetry, and I guess when I learned poetry, I had a fabulous mentor in Sydney, a lady called Denise Aldridge, and she used to hold poetry workshops each week in a little studio at the back of her house. And each week she would address a different form of poetry just to get us out of our mould, to just not think there's such a thing as rhyming poetry or free verse. She wanted us to think outside the box, and I've loved it ever since. I've liked to experiment in different forms.
So what we're talking about is your book Lost in the Pleiades, and it's going to be launched when?
It's going to be launched on the 19th of February at Smith's, at the wonderful Smith's, and Owen Bullock will be managing the launch, 7 p.m. at Smith's. It's free entry because Monday. Of a book launch on Monday evening.
I love the metaphor of the title, Lost, because I think that the flip side of lost is found. And as you go through this book, you find so many things.
Yes, well, I started exploring. I was looking at a theme of the Seven Sisters or the Pleiades. And I was inspired, first of all, when I went to the Australian Observatory up at Mount Stromlo. And there was this wonderful exhibition there on the dark emu, which I didn't know much about, and this is quite some years ago, and they also talked about the Seven Sisters then. And then I thought, wow, this is fabulous, because I'd always loved Greek mythology and the story of the Seven Sisters, which I was familiar with. And then I started reading and found out that this star formation has been important in cultures throughout the world.
You mentioned this in your introduction, and then even the way you oftentimes have a poem before a poem in here, if there is a piece of just a little bit of information or knowledge that helps contextualize it, you provide it.
Yes, well, I tried to have a little box of information that would help the readers to understand either where that poem came from or what it, to make it less obscure if there were any references in the poem.
This is Ginninderra Press. Was this a difficult book to edit? I mean, it's got so many different components.
Well, I'm a member of a few different poetry critiquing groups in Canberra. So every poem in this book has been through a number of eyes and critiquing.
Okay.
I also approached a Canberra editor to look at it, and she was the one who suggested the little box of explanation about each poem to help contextualize it, and that was a fabulous help.
It's really neat how you can get an outside perspective, and it helps make the book whole.
Yes.
I made a very short list, I'm sure it is not at all comprehensive, of everything in this book. Different topics you've covered, because I was marveling at it. Of course, you talk about the astronomy, the stars and the moon also, but then there's mythology, and then there's the Subaru, like the car company.
Yes, that's the Japanese name for the Pleiades. So then I thought I'd just let my imagination wander a little bit. There's a poem about the cars in there, so
I mean,
why not?
It's almost anthropological in its approach, because we visit all these different cultures through these poems.
Yes, well, I tried to do that, and I also tried to be very careful about not stealing any cultural sensitive information.
Yes.
So I really, there were a lot of other poems I'd written which I excluded because they weren't appropriate for me as a white person in Australia to write about. So I took those out. And there are a couple of poems in here in the beginning that are based on the Seven Sisters exhibition that was held at the National Museum of Australia a few years ago. Mm-hmm. A fabulous exhibition. Mm. What I did is I've approached those as an acrostic poem, and I also contacted the artists concerned to make sure that they were comfortable with what I'd written.
The book even provides links to those images. Yes. If they're online. And
they are online, yeah. And they're fabulous works of art.
Yeah,
I think
they are.
A lot of Australians should be aware of those. Mm.
You've really provided us the short in terms of it being a book of poetry, let's say, compared to a novel. But we really do get to wander and wonder as we go through
it. Yes, it is both. I wanted to get gorgeous. That sense of wonder, as in W-O-N-D-E-R,
yes, that's it. Yeah.
Which is what the stars have always meant to me, too.
Oh, yeah, yes. That comes through.
I'll start off with one that's based on the exhibition, the Seven Sisters exhibition, and it's called Learning to Fly, and it's after Kun Karang Kalnya Pa Kananu. I'm going to have to do that several times. Or Seven Sisters are Flying, maybe just leave the English. I need to practice that, actually. And it's called Learning to Fly. I wish you could have seen it, Mum, the way those artists wove grass, branches, raffia, fencing wire, feathers, and wool. The way you taught me to cast on, twisting 8-ply around steel needles, drawing through the back of each stitch to make a firm basque. The way their arms stretched high, fingers open, as if to grasp the air. The way you taught me to hold the needles, not too tightly, not too lightly. The way their bountiful breasts, outlined in yellow, my favourite colour, hung loudly and proudly, no mistaking these sisters for shrinking types. The way you bought me my first training bra and warned me of the perils of men. The way their colours blended and morphed, shades of magenta, blue, aquamarine, to the ochres of earth. The way you always suggested muted tones that would match any outfit. The way their hair exploded in a tangle of unbridled wool. The way you brushed my hair and plaited it in braids so taut it hurt. Mum, I wish you could have seen how those Seven Sisters rose into the night sky across the dome of the travelling Kangarakalpa display, and how I too learned to fly. So that's based on the images, the beautiful constructed, they were life-size, larger than life-size images that had been made by the Chambi Desert Weavers, and are just beautiful. And they appealed to me because I come from, my first degree was in textile technology. So I've always been interested in textile art, especially I was just fascinated by these magnificent creatures, I would call them, because they're almost living to me.
That's what happens is I think in this book, each poem brings some other aspect alive. It's a very animated book.
I tried to do that, and I tried to make it not too serious too, and infuse a little bit of humour into it, because some of it is quite serious. And one of the poems, the poem I'll read next, is called Photobombing the Seven Sisters. And this was done in fun as much as anything, because between in April 2020, the planet Venus passed in front of the Pleiades when viewed from central UK at precisely 9 p.m. So this is called Photobombing Seven Sisters. It happens, the happy newlyweds, a passerby behind, hand raised in V for victory, or is his wrist flipped for a different sign? Zoom meetings where the cat, always the cat, jumps on a lap, worse a laptop. It happens. Then on 3rd of April 2020, Venus photobombed the Pleiades. And though this didn't cause a traffic pile-up on the M2, Britons armed with binoculars, last used for Newcastle United versus Nottingham Forest, witnessed a different transit of Venus as she swept across the sisters, glowing brighter than the moon. Photobombing, It can happen to anyone.
What you've created that works so well are all these extended metaphors that you can then use in different ways, mm-hmm. right? But that idea of photobombing can happen to even to the Pleiades.
I thought that was quite amusing.
Yeah, it is.
But I tried to explore other things because the Pleiades, because they've been fascinating to other cultures around the world, there are a group of poets called the Alexandrian Pleiad.
Yes.
And they were back in the days of Ptolemy II. So a long time ago, 3rd century BCE. And then in their wake, there was a group of French, in the 16th century, a group of French poets called the La Pleiad. And so I had a little play with each of those poets and wrote a poem that kind of reflected either their name or the topic of what they were writing about and tried to make that into a poem.
Right, that was on my list, actually. French poets was on my list. I mean, you talk about things that are unexpected, right? French mm-hmm. poets from a few centuries, not the usual French poets.
No, not the usual ones. And one of them caught my eye in particular, and this was Pierre Ronsard. Because I grew up Pierre Ronsard rose over my front fence in Sydney.
Oh.
And it's a beautiful rose. So I couldn't resist but write an ode to a Pierre Ronsard rose. And it was inspired by a poem that he wrote, which was Ode à Cassandra Mignon à l'envoi de la rose. So it was kind of related. So this ode to a Pierre Ronsard rose. New to gardening, when I opened the catalogue, Trelaw Roses, 2017, 106 glossy pages, three pictures abreast in colours that shimmered. Each bud and blossom, a precise shape with no hint of black spot or powdery mildew. And when I found you on page 73, I knew I had found the perfect rose. However, even love has its seasons. Flowers wither, aphids thrive, you hunger for more and more food and constant tending, and sharper than a shrew's tongue, your thorns. This section's in three parts because there were three poets of the Pleiad.
So I was going to ask if you would read the second poem.
Okay, and this is based on a poem by Joachim du Bellay. And he wrote a poem called Si notre vie est moins qu'une journée, which is If Our Life is Less Than a Single Day. But this is really a description, there's a bit of a short bio of this poet. Sometimes a poem's title can mislead you into thinking of a life in the context of just one day and not eternity, as was intended. But even so, the prospect of ashes to ashes and all that at the end of one's allotted time can lead one to consider if it was really worth the effort, what was the point, and why it seemed so hard at times to find the opportunity for fun. What a difference love makes, as Du Bellay found when working with his cardinal in Rome and met Faustine, immortalised as Columba or Columbelle, until interrupted by her jealous husband, which may have precipitated his return alone to Paris.
Did you mean this to be a sonnet?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because it reads as a sonnet.
It is a sonnet, yes.
And then it turns with What a Difference Love Makes.
Yes.
You're driving in one direction and then you just sort of swerve and then bring us home.
Well, that was the intention with this because I was just very amused when I read about his life and wondered how on earth could I bring all this together.
It's in 14 lines, no
yes,
less.
Yes, exactly. It's a modern sonnet. It's not a Shakespearean or Petrarchan sonnet. But it's just...
Yeah, it's a sonnet.
But it's still a sonnet, yes.
Yes, love it.
Yes.
The way that you introduce the poems and as you go, as you read through it, you're guided to this and that by what you relate, and it contextualizes, but it also would seem to make it a leisurely read where the little guideposts give you some sort of relief so you can concentrate better on the poems themselves.
Oh.
I mean, it might sound outrageous to say, but why don't more poets do that? Because so many poetry books are very difficult to, I mean, they're almost impenetrable sometimes because of the lack of that.
Yes, I think, you know, if you look at a poet like Anne Knox, who's so, Anne Sexton, who is so full of literary references that you need an encyclopedia beside you to decipher some of her poetry, for instance.
Yes.
And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make my poems accessible. And I didn't think it would hurt to have that type of little explanation there, because it, you open the reader up a little bit, I think. It makes it easier for them.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good point. It does. It sort of gives you a way of using the whole brain while going through the book. I wanted to talk about God's throne, if that's all right, because it's a shape poem.
It is a shape poem.
The poem is a spiral, right? Starts in the center, and then it goes round and round. And what I found as I was reading it is the proximity of the other words makes for interesting suggestions as you're trying to follow this single thread. And then it unravels.
And then it unravels and almost forms a question mark, because that was kind of part of the intent of this. It's a fairly tongue-in-cheek. I hope people don't find this too disrespectful, because it was about the Pleiades constellation, the role of one of the stars in that, as Alcyone, as the central star of the Pleiades, was thought by Jehovah's Witnesses to be the throne of, centre of the universe, the throne of God. That, of course, is not a view held by, in modern times, it was discounted. Mm. So this is just a single breath poem. It's a single sentence.
Mm-hmm.
The whole lot just rolls on the tongue. It's a bit hard to read without spinning the book as you read.
Well, I purposely read it without spinning the book to see what would that effect be. And it was much more disorienting. But I think that that means it's working.
Yes, this is fairly much an experimental poem. It's a visual poem, and people have got to work at it to read it.
Yeah, you're trusting the reader,
yes,
for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Alcyone, site of the throne of Jehovah, center of gravity for the universe, around which the other stars of the Pleiades revolve as day after day they cross the skies, signified by the finger of the great pyramid of Khufu at midnight on the autumnal equinox, a theory proposed by Johann Heinrich von Madler, observing through a 95mm refractor telescope made by Joseph von Fraunhofer with its achromatic objective lens, held close by followers of Charles Taze Russell until 1953, when such views were considered unwise.
And the word unwise, all capitalized, just falls apart.
And it's fragmented. Yeah. It's falling apart.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's funny because it's not nearly as fun to analyze the poem, but, you know, there are historical factual points within it, and yet it's exploring something much greater.
Yes, it is.
It's
exploring belief,
yeah.
And the basis of belief, where we get our beliefs from.
Mm.
And, you know, the Great Pyramid of Cheops pointing at a particular point in time directly to the Pleiades and to this particular star in the centre of the Pleiades.
Your interests are in things that anyone can observe to some degree any time, every day. Like you look up, there's the heavens, and yet you find within them all kinds of strange, I guess, perceptual, historical and other observations and points of interest. You emerge as perhaps a poet with a mind unlike most people.
Some people have told me I've got a mind like a sponge, but I don't know if it was a compliment or an insult.
Does that mean that it retains or that things pass through?
I suspect things wash through, but I do observe a lot of things, and I'm very curious.
Mm-hmm.
So I just love finding out about things. Yeah. And I guess that's part of, I've worked most of my life as a technical writer. So I've worked in science and in industry and in IT, all sorts of areas, anything from FA18s through to software and programming or firefighting, you know, you name it, I've done it, and road building. And so you've got to learn information very, very quickly.
That's an interesting angle on how you come to be a poet. What has been the historical, I guess, evolution for you?
Oh, I've always been interested in poetry, even as a young kid. My dad used to write poetry long, long ago, and he had a regular column called The Stockman in the local paper in Singleton, the Singleton Argus. And he was a bush poet way back in the day. This is back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, those tired days. And I guess we're a family of readers, really. And as a writer, I always wanted to write. And my husband gave me, he said, "You're always talking about writing. Here you are. Here's your Christmas present. It's all you're getting this year," which was a blank book. Best present I ever had in my life. Yes. So I then joined a writing group and I thought, I'll write stories. And so I've got three novels sitting in a drawer underneath in the bottom drawer of my desk, which will never go anywhere. Then I discovered poetry.
And you were informed by that the technical writing that you had done. It's an unlikely source, I guess, of poetic fodder, but it sounds it's a rich one.
It is a rich one, yes. I've got I've got a science degree, I've got an arts degree, I've got a few things like that that have helped along the way.
A lot of times when you're working with younger students, you hear them say, "Why do I have to learn this?" And my retort is always that no piece of information is ever lost on a poet or a writer. You just don't know down the road what you'll be writing about.
Absolutely.
And what proves useful. But I do think that your book really encapsulates that idea.
Yeah, I mean, you could even go so far as to say that often what you find lacking in some poets is a substance that they're writing about. They might write about emotions, they might emote, rather than have anything concrete to pin their ideas to, in a sense, to inform their ideas, to be the fount of ideas.
Yes, yes. Well, nothing's ever lost, you know.
Nothing.
There's a poem in here that when I was writing it, I dedicated it in my heart to my beautiful brother, who passed away about 11 years ago now. It was called The Gift. And in our house, we're back in East Maitland in the country, and we had some beautiful peach trees around the side of the house. And I remember, this is just recalled one day, and I grew a peach tree in my house in Canberra, and I went out to look at what was happening, and it was just one peach on this tree. And this is what this poem's about. It reminded me, took me back to this time with my brother. It's called The Gift. About to turn away, I see a peach, just one, that has escaped possums and cockatoos. Other peaches, the late flowering tree on the secret side of the house, my brother perched up high, tossing fruit to me below, the silken scent of ripeness rising into sunshine. And he asked me, this brother from boarding school, on his home holiday, about my schoolwork, explain the mysteries of the universe, stars and constellation, a listening and understanding I'd not before experienced, but lasted almost 50 years, the gap when he was gone, this single peach.
One of the things I think that's interesting about the metaphor of the seven sisters is that you come from a family with siblings.
I do. I'm one of eight. I'm the seventh.
That's a little symbolic, don't you think?
It is a little symbolic.
And so which brother was this?
This was the oldest brother.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
And then your sister Anne, who's also a poet?
My sister Anne is also a poet, played a pivotal part in this book. Mm. We have a habit of critiquing each other's poems, and she's so generous with her time and very astute with her counsel. Mm-hmm. And so her feedback on this book was absolutely invaluable.
How long was this book in the making?
Well, look, I think the genesis was there for years. For a few years, all these ideas bubbling up, but I didn't start writing this specific book until about 3 years ago. So it took 2 years.
Oh. Mm. The richness of it, for me, suggested, you know, decades.
I guess not decades, but there are a couple of poems in here that are a little bit older, I guess, that I had written previously that I thought they fitted.
Mm. Yes. It adds depth. almost like the night sky, right? The way you perceive it can be so different on different evenings.
Oh, absolutely. Depending on
everything.
Yes. Sometimes it's clear, sometimes it's just so misty. And sometimes, you know, I do find myself falling into the sky sometimes when I look up at it. It's one of those things.
And it depends, too, on where in the world you are, most literally, right? I mean, one of the things I've learned in the Southern Hemisphere is how different the sky can be.
Oh, yes.
At different... but you sort of go between the two hemispheres, don't you?
Yes, we do. And then I noticed a huge difference moving from Sydney to Canberra, the clarity of the sky here. In Sydney, it was always clouded and it was lovely to get out. We used to go camping out west and you know, you just look at the night sky.
Right.
We asked Carmel Summers what she's working on at the moment.
Currently, I'm writing a biography, a poetic biography of Eliza Cook, who was the wife of Captain Cook. And I chose her because she's been forgotten by history, partly through her own choosing, because she destroyed all her correspondence before she died. So there is little record of her life. And I thought, oh, that sets me a challenge. One, why did she burn all those letters? And then... why can't we find out more about her? So I set myself the task of finding out more about her, and I'm halfway through that task now.
And so that task leads you to a PhD,
That
right?
task led me to a PhD, which I'm doing on poetic biography, on finding out whether the act of poetry subverts truth in a biography.
That's a huge question.
Yes, and I think it's an important question because we're so used to prose biographies, but... poetry has so much more to offer in terms of the questions that it leaves open for the reader. And I think that's important, particularly when the details of a person's life are not known, but we can surmise, we can make some certain informed assumptions. But there's also that dreaming room where we've got to leave the reader open to make draw their own conclusions. And I think poetry is ideally situated for that task.
On Poetry on the Radio this week, we've spoken with Canberra-based poet Carmel Summers, and we'll speak with her some more on our next instalment, starting with her poetic biography of Eliza Cook, the wife of explorer James Cook. Carmel Summers' book, Lost in the Pleiades, from Ginninderra Press, will launch on Monday, February 19, at 7 p.m. at Smith's Alternative, together with Tony Stephen Williams's Re-Immersion, also from Ginninderra Press. For ArtSound FM, I'm Peter Searles.
The Rhyming Bugle, poetry news from around the region. Congratulations to Judith Nangala Crispin, whose poem of the Dead Woman was shortlisted for the 2024 Peter Porter Prize. The winner, announced late in January, was New South Wales poet Dan Hogan for Workarounds. Also on the shortlist was Immigration Triction by Western Australia poet Natalie Damjanovich Napoleon, who will join us in coming months on Poetry on the Radio. The shortlisted poems appear on the Australian Book Review website. The weekly Monday poetry readings at Smith's Alternative in Civic have resumed. On Monday, February 19 at 7 p.m, Carmel Summers will launch Lost in the Pleiades from Ginninderra Press, while Tony Stephen Williams will launch Re-Immersion, also from Ginninderra Press. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly in the studios of ArtSound FM in Canberra on unceded traditional land. Hosts Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles create the program with producer Peter Monaghan. Poetry on the Radio is heard each Sunday at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. The music on today's program is from William O. Bill Smith's 2008 jazz opera Space in the Heart. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope, performed by the Atrium Musica de Madrid.
More.